You know, I got in a little bit of trouble last time because I told a story about when we first came here that may or may not have involved my sister. So she's off the hook today, but Charity's not. I'm just kidding. But we came in 2004, about 14 and a half years ago when I was in the fifth grade. And since that time, I was trying to think back. I think I've had 4 Sunday school teachers and 5 if you include pastor. I've had at least 10 children's church teachers. I've had youth group leaders, a patch club leader. I've had VBS teachers. I've had 4 or 5 academy teachers. And I've had countless helpers, assistants, and substitutes in between. And that doesn't even count all the guys who filled in for pastor and the sound room guys and the secretary and the custodial crew and everybody else who helps out in our church. And I just say that to say we've got a very generous church, and it's filled with people who are willing to give of their time, and that's something as a kid you don't really appreciate, you're not very thankful for, but when you get older and look back, it's very evident. And after high school, I went to college, and I experienced more generosity in the form of the care packages that you guys send us, and that's a pretty... My sophomore year, for instance, when I got that package, it was 2 big old boxes that I lugged back to my room, and when I was opening it up, I'm pretty sure I had 11 pounds of licorice in there. And on top of everything else, the gifts, the notes of encouragement, some of them from, people I've known my whole life, others from those of you I barely even knew. And when my roommates got back, they said, wow, Brad, where'd you get all that stuff? And I said, well, it's my church's care package. And they said, man, you got the best home church. And I said, yeah, I do. And so I thought, it really doesn't get much better than that. But then I got married. And, you experience generosity on a whole new level when you get married, at least at this church I found. And that's a very humbling experience. People just kind of open up the floodgates on you. As long as the power doesn't go out, I'm in good shape. But we have a very time and financially generous group of people here, and I'm thankful for that, not just for my own sake, but, of course, infinitely more important, your faithfulness and generosity to the Lord and His work. And so this message tonight's on stewardship, and it may seem a little odd or out of place coming from a 25-year-old who really hasn't walked the paths of life that many of you walked. But that's why my aim is to draw from Scripture tonight, and I really hope to do one of 3 things, and I hope that it'll... That you'll walk away with one of these things. I hope to encourage many of you, and that after tonight, you'll be comforted by a life lived in obedience and generosity to the Lord and faithfulness. And then maybe to some of you, I would hope to challenge you. Maybe you generally walk with the Lord, you do what's required, but maybe you understand that the Lord is calling you to a higher level of stewardship. And then to others of you, maybe it will be a humble rebuke. Maybe you're not doing what's adequate, your lackluster in your obedience. Maybe you need to make some changes in your thinking, in your way of doing things. And I know for me, when I was going over this, I kind of felt all 3 of those things at different times. I felt encouraged, I felt challenged, and I felt rebuked. I ought to do a better job. So you can turn to Ephesians chapter 5. The first, we're going to go really over just 2 things tonight, and the first one is the topic of time. The topic of time. Can't get away from time. We all live in it. One day it's going to be done away with, but for now, here we are. There's a clock on the back of the wall, and it tells me how much time I've got left. No doubt, a few of you will probably check it over the next few minutes. Some of you check your watches throughout the days. I don't know what's going on out there. I hope we make it. But others of us glance down at our phones, almost like a second nature, to check the time. At least I do. We set alarms, we set records, we set dates, we set time allowances, we measure all these things, including the span of our lives, we measure them in time. Oftentimes, time works for us, but a lot of times time seems to work against us. You might have 10 minutes till you have to get out of bed. Some of you guys got 3 months till you have to go back to school, or you get to go back to school. For me, it was have to. In sports, time becomes very precious when you're down in the final moments and the other team has the ball. Time seems to go older the faster you get. And it goes even faster when life is fragile or hanging in the balance due to cancer or failing heart or whatever it is. I had a I had a saying in college, and I'm sure it wasn't original with me, but I always used to say it when people say, how's college going? I'd say the same thing. The days go slow, but the years go fast. There are some days where I just thought, man, I can't wait for this day to get over. And then you look back, and you're done. And that's kind of how it seems to go a lot of times. Mrs. Kanak used to have a poster on her room when I was in high school, and it said, if it wasn't for the last minute, nothing would ever get done. Seems pretty accurate. A few more quotes on time. It says, you make time for what you make important. Time is like water in a fist. It always seems to slip away. The bad news is time flies. The good news is you're the pilot. And lastly, time is free, but time is precious. Once you've lost it, you can never get it back. And so time is something we spend. At least that's how I often think about it. It's going to take me this long to get there, and I'm going to get there at this time, and I'm going to be there for this long, and that's just kind of how we go. But how I really ought to think about it, and how I would challenge you to think about it, is that time is a valuable gift from the Lord, and it's very gracious of Him to give it to us, and we ought to be spending it or using it for His honor and glory. We sing songs about time. You'll recognize these songs. Take my life and let it be consecrated, Lord, to Thee. Take my what? Take my moments and my days. Let them flow in ceaseless praise. I need Thee every hour. Teach me Thy will and Thy rich promises in me fulfill. I need Thee, oh, I need Thee, every hour I need Thee. And then this song is a pretty rich song, and I hope when we sing it, you know, sometimes it gets very easy to just sing a song because we know the words and it kind of just flows out, at least for me. You know, we don't really think about the words, but if you think about the words on this song, they're very rich. It says, take time to be holy. Speak off with the Lord. Abide in Him always and feed on His word. Make friends of God's children. Help those who are weak. Forgetting in nothing His blessing to seek. And then it goes on to say, spend much time in secret with Jesus alone. That ought to be how we're spending our time. We spend time on many things. We spend time on sleeping, eating, driving, working, waiting, praying, scrolling. We spend time on Facebook. We spend time on the internet. How are we using that time? Ephesians chapter 5, we're going to read verses 15, 16, and 17. So verse 15 says, see then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Wherefore be not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. So here in verse 15, we've got this command to live in a wise manner. And my original thought was, why is that command there? Because it ought to just be a no-brainer that we live in a wise manner. But then I think foolishness comes very easy to all of us, whereas wisdom is from the Lord. But then again in verse 17, we see this caution not to be unwise, but instead be in tune to the will of the Lord. And without getting too much into it, we might say, well, I don't know what the will of the Lord is. How can I be in tune to it? And I would just say maybe a good place to start is by redeeming the time that we've already been given and using the time to do what the Lord commands us to. But that's kind of a different topic. But in these verses, in verse 15, we can see the topic of time being sandwiched by wisdom. We can see verse 15, you know, be wise. Verse 16, redeem the time. And verse 17, be wise. And so what's the idea here? Redeeming the time, what's that mean? Well, redeem is the key word. It's that same idea as our redemption in Christ. Well, what's that? Well, what did Christ do for us? He died for us. His blood, it bought back, it saved, it redeemed that which was what? Otherwise, it was lost, unprofitable, and sinful, and really good for nothing. So that's the idea that we're challenged here in verse 16. We ought to be using the time that we've been given, now that we're saved, to buy it back and redeem it, and using it for something greater than ourselves, for the glory of the Lord. Our time is valuable. God entrusted it to us for a reason, but He gave us a predetermined amount of it, and our time is limited. James 4:14 says our life is what? It's but a vapor. It appears for a little time, and then it vanishes away. Psalm 103:15 and 16 says, as for a man, his days are as grass, as a flower of the field, so he flourisheth. For the wind passeth over it, and it is gone, and the place thereof shall know it no more. So we ought to redeem the time while we can. So what are some ways we can redeem the time? Well, look at verse number 2 of Ephesians chapter 5. It says, and walk in love, as Christ also has loved us and has given Himself for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling savor. We ought to walk in love. That's a pretty easy concept to say, but it's pretty difficult to do sometimes. We ought to love God and we ought to love others. It's a lot easier to say than to do. Verse number 8. says, "For ye were sometimes darkness, but now are ye light in the Lord. Walk as children of light." So we ought to be walking in love. We also got to walk in light. We ought to be living differently from those wandering around lost in darkness. We ought to be living a life worthy of the Lord. And then verse 15, which we already read, but we'll read it again. It says, "See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise." We ought to be walking circumspectly. We got to be mindful of our sinful surroundings, keeping eternity in the forefront of our minds. So we ought to walk in love. We ought to walk in light. We ought to walk carefully. We ought to walk circumspectly. So how are you spending your time? You've got to work, and working hard is, I think, a good use of time, and you've got to spend time with your family, and investing in your family is a good use of time. And you got to go to church. You've been faithful to church, and that's also important. But are you working so hard that your relationships with the Lord and with others are falling by the wayside, suffering? Are you spending time with your family? Are you just there? Or are you investing in your spouse and in your kids? Kids, are you being respectful to your parents when you're with them? Or are you just there? Sometimes I think it gets easy to spend time doing something and then you're not really doing it. We might read our Bible and we never know what we really read. We might spend time with someone and nothing really was accomplished, but we ought to be using our time wisely. When you're in church, are you mentally engaged? Are you reverent? Are you genuine in your worship? Are you encouraging others, or is your mind a million miles away and you can't wait to get on out of here? It's just another thing you cross off your schedule. It comes easy to us to do that sometimes. I got to go to church. I don't feel like talking to anybody today. You know, we sit through a sermon and in one ear, out the other. And it gets easy to do that sometimes, but we ought to be redeeming the time. So a few last thoughts on time. Are you spending it wisely? Are you spending it like you have an unlimited supply? Or are you treating it like something the Lord has graciously provided you with? Because we all know one day time's going to run out. 1 John 2:17 says, "The world passeth away and the lust thereof, but he that doeth the will of God abideth forever." And we also know we're going to have to give an account for that time. Verse 28 of 1 John 2 says, "Little children, abide in him, that when he shall appear, we may have confidence and not be ashamed before him at his coming." So I would say, are you stewarding your time? We're making a good use of our time. If I had to put a title on this sermon, I guess I would say, stewarding today what's gone tomorrow, because that's what we have to do. We got to steward our time because, just tomorrow it's going to be gone. Go ahead and turn to Luke chapter 16. It's really all I'll say about time. Luke chapter 16, and of course this is the parable of the unjust steward. And we're going to read the first 12 verses. Luke chapter 16. And it says there in verse 1, "And he said also unto his disciples, there was a certain rich man, which had a steward. And the same was accused on him, that he had wasted his goods. And he called him and said unto him, How is it that I hear this of thee? Give an account of thy stewardship, for thou mayest no longer be steward. And the steward said within himself, What shall I do? For my Lord taketh away from me the stewardship. I cannot dig, to beg I am ashamed. I am resolved what to do, that when I am put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their house. So," verse 5, "he called every one of his Lord's debtors unto him, and he said unto the first, How much owest thou unto my Lord? And he said, 100 measures of oil. And he said unto him, Take thy bill, and sit down quickly, and write 50. And he said to another, And how much owest thou? And he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said unto him, Take thy bill, and write 80. Verse number 8, "And the Lord commended the unjust steward, because he had done wisely. For the children of this world are in their generation wiser than the children of light. And I say unto you, make to yourselves friends of the mammon of unrighteousness, that when ye fail, they may receive you into everlasting habitations. He that is faithful in that which is least is also faithful in much. And he that is unjust in the least is unjust also in much." Verse 11, "If therefore ye have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if ye have not been faithful in that which is another man's, who shall give you that which is your own?" So we're introduced here to this steward who's been wasting his master's goods. The idea here is similar case would be Joseph, except with a different outcome. But Joseph was put in charge of everything Potiphar had in this world, all his material goods, And he's a manager of it all. He was the steward. And so he was taking care of all of these things that didn't belong to him. And so this master comes to this steward, and he says, you know, what's going on? You better start explaining. All my stuff's gone. You're done. And this steward, like any of us, you know, he's concerned. He's in a pretty big predicament. He says, what shall I do? For my Lord taketh away from me the stewardship. I can't dig, and I'm too ashamed to beg. So he gets this bright idea. Verse 4, when I am put out, they may receive me into their houses. Well, what's his idea? Well, in verse 5 through 7, he starts calling his master's debtors, and he starts reducing their debts. In verse 6, we can see he reduces the first man's debt in half from 100 to 50. Think about when you bought your house. If someone just cut your house right in half, you know, what you owe on it. Not bad, huh? And then in verse 7, he reduces the next one from 100 to 80. Still not bad. Well, what's he doing here? He's using what's in his control now, but for a limited time, to set himself up for the future, to prepare his own future. And then we come to verse 8. And it kind of seems at first glance like Christ is praising this fraudulent, sinful behavior, and it just doesn't seem right to us. It says, and the Lord commended the unjust steward because he had done wisely. So that word wisely, a lot of people say it could have been, and some people say it should have been translated shrewdly. And you can't read anything about this or listen to anything about this without someone mentioning that it's that same word used when Jesus commands us to be as wise as serpents, but as harmless as doves. The steward is not being commended for wasting everything that his master had. He's not being commended for cooking the books. He's being commended for his shrewdness and the preparation for his future. It's that idea of being keen, sharp, discerning, and perceptive of things to come. And the second half of verse 8 really drives the point home. It says there, for the children of this world are in their generation wiser than the children of light. The unsaved, unregenerate sinners of this world go to more trouble, are more concerned, they're more shrewd in their preparation for their earthly future than oftentimes we as saved believers are for our eternal future. And so we ought to make a conscious effort to make sure that we are preparing for ourselves a rich eternal future. And this kind of leads into verse 9. And it says, make to yourselves friends of the mammon of unrighteousness, that when you fail, they may receive you into everlasting habitations. And again, when I first read this, I thought, well, that's weird. Why is Jesus commanding us to make friends of, you know, the mammon of unrighteousness? It's because I had a misconception about that term. It's not talking about ill-gotten gain. It's not talking about illegally obtained wealth. It's talking just about, you know, worldly goods, the things of this life, earthly substance and riches. That's the mammon of unrighteousness. And so we, like this steward, we ought to be using what's in our control now, but for a limited time, to prepare for a bright, rich future where we are warmly welcomed. Except, of course, for us, it's not into an eternal habitation, it's to a heavenly one. Knowing, in verse, you know, 1 Timothy 6:7, what's it tell us? You've brought nothing into this world, it's certain you can carry nothing out. We ought to be using our treasures, our abilities, our talents, our time, our money, our resources, all that's been entrusted to us right now, to make eternal friends, so that we may boldly approach the gates of heaven when that day comes. We know that works don't save us, but we are saved to what? To do good works. 1 Timothy 6:17 through 19, I'll read those to you real quick. It says, charge them that are rich in this world, that's us, that they be not high-minded, as Mr. Hugh reminded us last week, nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God, who giveth us richly all things to enjoy. Verse 18, this is directed to us. That we do good, that we be rich in good works, that we be ready to distribute, that we're willing to communicate. Why? Laying up in store for ourselves a good foundation against the time to come, that we may lay hold on eternal life. Pastor said a few months ago, those who have been abundantly blessed should use that abundance for spiritual purposes. Luke 12:48 says, for unto whomsoever much is given, much shall be required. Much given, much required. Our primary motivation ought to be to use what we have now for the eternal glory of God in heaven one day. That being said, Luke 6:38 tells us, "Given it shall be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, shall men give into your bosom. For with the same measure that you meet withal, it shall be measured to you again." Proverbs 11:25 tells us, "The liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself." And of course, 2 Corinthians 9:7 reminds us, God loves what? God loveth a cheerful giver. We all should be cheerful givers. Verse number 10 of Luke 16. It says, "He that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much, and he that is unjust in the least is unjust also in much." What I used to think about this was it meant, you know, he who can be trusted with a few things can be trusted with a few more things, but that's not what's really being said there. Look at verse 10 once again. "He that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much. And he that is unjust in the least is unjust also in much." Folks, what's this whole parable been about? It's been about money. And when we take a step back, and it's hard to do through American eyes, but when we take a step back, what really is the least? Is not money the least? You know, what is money compared to your health? Or your marriage, your family, your home, your kids, your parents? What's money compared to a happy life? To your church, to spiritual blessings from God, to salvation, to a relationship with the one who died to save your soul. Of course, there is no comparison. Money pales. You know, money really is the least when you think about it in terms of all those things. Proverbs 23:4-5 says, "Weary not thyself to be rich. Cease from thine own wisdom. Wilt thou set thine eyes upon that which is not?" And then this is the main part of the verse, you know, for now. "For riches certainly make themselves wings, like an eagle that flieth towards heaven." Pastor also said a few months ago, what is the basic theology of wealth? God gives it to his people to use for spiritual purposes. And then he went on to talk about how Abraham gave so much to the Lord, not as a command. He wasn't commanded to tithe. It wasn't really an act of obedience necessarily. It was an act of reverence. It showed where Abraham's heart is. And of course, he's one of the greatest pictures of faith that we've ever seen. That ought to be what we're modeling after. A heart of reverence towards the Lord. I forget the reference right now, but what's the verse say? Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Where's your treasure? Where's your heart? You know, you ought to take time to think about those things. Where am I investing my life into? Proverbs 3:9-10, pastor was talking about how there, you know, it's not so much that we should only give as an act of obedience. It should be an act of obedience. It should be an act of worship. But we should also just give as an act of wisdom. And he was talking about how it's a very wise thing to give. I think Jim Elliot had it figured out, not just with money, but with, you know, everything. He said, of course, he famously said, you've all heard the saying, "He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain not what he cannot lose." What a great testimony. And then we sing songs regarding stewardship. And like I said earlier, sometimes for me it gets so easy to just sing the same psalms over and over again. And the meaning sometimes gets lost on me. But I hope that when we sing songs like this, we really mean it. "Take my silver and my gold. Not a mite would I withhold. Not a single mite. Not anything would I withhold from the Lord." And then like the song we sang tonight, "By and by when I look on his face, I wish I had given him more. More, so much more. More of my life than I ever gave before. By and by, when I look on his face, I wish I had given him more." Now, obviously, we know when we get to heaven, there will be no sorrow. But we have an opportunity to do what that song is saying, what we all just sang a few minutes ago. We have an opportunity to do those things right now. We ought to be giving the Lord more of our time, more of our heart, more of our resources, more of our money, more of our life, more of everything that's been entrusted to us now. We ought to be giving those things to the Lord so he can use them for his purposes. And that really ought to be our hope and our desire and our prayer. That ought to be how we live our lives. That how we ought to be making our financial decisions, how we go throughout each and every day. Is this pleasing to the Lord? Is this being a good steward of my life, of my time, of my money, of my family, of everything that we do? Will the Lord be honored in this? So we ought to redeem the time, and we ought to be faithful with what the Lord has entrusted us with today.